It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And let's do that. Let's talk legal. Both gentlemen are in the studio right now. I'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Mike.
We had a conversation, I think started now 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about elective share, and we're going to continue that conversation in today's broadcast.
Correct. Yes, we did talk last week about elective share. And the way that this evolves for our listeners, and what's important, very important to Wes and myself, is just that our listeners are aware of this law in the state of North Carolina. Knowledge, this is an area of the law where knowledge really is power. And so many folks in our state are not aware of this particular law. And what this particular law says, Mike, is basically that if Wes and I have a client who enters our office and they say, you know, look, my wife and I have agreed that the assets that we own are going to go to our children. They're not going to go to each other. Maybe this is because of the fact that they're in a second marriage and have children from a prior marriage. Or maybe it's because they've been married a long, long time, but one of the spouses has inherited a significant sum from their family and wants that particular sum to go to their children, to the exclusion of the spouse. The wife is saying, look, I inherited a great deal of money from my parents, and my husband is just fine. I don't need him to inherit this my inheritance if something happens to me. I wanted Mr. Harvell to go right on to my children. Well, these are things that Wes and I hear every day to the week, but the bottom line is that the state of North Carolina has an opinion. Mm-hmm. And through the elective share statute, the state of North Carolina basically says that notwithstanding what your wishes might be, that if you've been married for less than 5 years, your spouse is entitled by law to 15%. 5 to 10 years is 25%. And after 15 years, it's 50%. 15 years can pass by mighty quickly in either of the factual scenarios that I put forward. Either a second marriage with children from a prior marriage. Next thing you know, they've been married 15 years. They got married in their 60s, let's say. Okay? Mm-hmm. Or a marriage, a career marriage, where they've been married a very long, long time. Certainly more than 15 years. So these percentages that a spouse is entitled to are a very real thing in the North Carolina. So when a spouse comes into our office and says, I need to write a will, but I do not need to provide for my spouse, they are independent in their own right, and I'd like for you to make the will out in such a way so as to benefit my children. This, of course, for a lawyer, is a red flag, and we're going to have some further discussion. Now, there are a couple of exceptions to this law, which is that number one exception is that the parties can agree through a prenuptial agreement, if they have it, a prior to marriage agreement, or under some circumstances, a during the marriage or what might be called a postnuptial agreement, they waive this right. That has to be looked at very, very carefully, particularly if it's an agreement that's entered to after they've gotten married. Okay. Prenuptial agreements, as long as each party has a lawyer, they tend to be enforceable without much question. A postnuptial agreement, on the other hand, you know, you are already married, and so therefore, what is the consideration that's being given for a wife or a husband to waive this elective share in a postnuptial agreement? That has to be looked at very carefully. The last thing, of course, the other exception, the second exception, is that you certainly are entitled to place this elective share percentage, this percentage amount. You can place that in a trust for your spouse. and designate an independent trustee and say, okay, I understand that my spouse is entitled to this 50% of my estate. So, okay, fine. After all, we are married. Mm-hmm. We've been married for more than 15 years. And I'll let that pass into a trust, and I'll let her receive or he receive all of the income off of that trust. But they don't get the principal. And when their, quote, life is over, so to speak, maybe a life estate, you might think about it in terms of those assets. They have a lifetime right to those assets. But when they die, they pass back to my children. And that's known as an elective share trust.
It was, I'm intrigued by that, what you said at the outset, Cecil, as far as, if a spouse comes into an inheritance.
Yes.
And they want to pass it to their children and not keep it to their spouse. Are there other circumstances, financially speaking, that, are similar to an inheritance? Maybe somebody's working in a job and all of a sudden they got vested and their shares now, they can, they got an IPO or something.
Any circumstance. Sometimes it's the, you know, I've had a file where it was the sale of a family business and it was quite significant.
Okay.
But the wife, of course, they'd been married for a career marriage, you know, 50 years or so, but the wife just absolutely wanted her share to pass to the children. Now, I think the wife is thinking a lot of times when we hear these facts like that, that, well, you know, I know my husband, and I know if something happens to me, some girl's going to be after him, you know, and he's going to be subject to influence. And we built this family business together, okay, this tire company or this real estate company or this, you know, whatever the case might be kind of company, okay? And I want to make sure that, you know, the money that I got out of my shares of this corporation when we sold the business pass on now down to my two boys, okay? I don't want them to have to deal with their father out there getting remarried or whatever the case might be. So I don't want you to leave those assets. I don't want you to leave to my husband. The house, our bank accounts, all of that, that's fine. But this over here, I want to go directly to my children. Well, they've been married a long time in that file, okay? Mm-hmm. So it can come at us in any different, in many different directions. Now, where I'd like to move to right now, is that I've kind of outlined the law, if you will, known as the elective share in the state of North Carolina. This is a North Carolina specific statute which governs the citizens, the great citizens of the state of North Carolina. But what if these parties just can't agree? Who is the mediator here? Let's get Mr. West to talk to us about this. Where does this go? I mean, we've had files in our office, as you can imagine, where this can become, you know, contested.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, of course, when a file such as that in our office would go over to West. And so, West, talk to us a little bit about if these parties can't agree.
Okay, I will. But before I do that, there's a couple things that come to mind.
Yes.
You know, that I'm sitting here listening to Cecil explain this, and there's no way to explain what he just explained in a very easy to digest manner. It's a complex thing. I mean, it's not like if someone's just tuning into the radio, we're talking about someone trespassing.
Yeah.
Most people
we
can get with that.
Means, right?
They got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people understand, you know, if we're talking about a homeowners association, what your obligations are and those kind of things, someone building a house that's not consistent with the covenants. They get that.
Mm-hmm.
This is complicated. And I think that, you know, although, you know, we understand this law and know how it works and have seen the real world implications of it, I think the average listener probably could potentially just kind of zone out on it. So I'm going to make a couple comments about it. Just kind of a wrap up of what Cecil said. Number one, I mean, it really comes into play when you're talking about a second or third marriage. It really, this elective share issue is not as big of an issue when you have, as Cecil's referred to it as, the career marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The marriage for years and years and years. Because why is that? Because what happens is normally the spouses want to leave everything to each other and then down to the two kids or three kids or one kid or whatever.
Very traditional.
Very traditional. But when you've got the second marriage, and especially when you have the kids from a previous marriage, then you want to, in most cases, take care of your surviving spouse to a certain extent, what I normally see is things like, well, I'm just going to leave her a life estate in the house so she can stay there and a little bit of money, and everything else I'm going to pass on down to the kids. And I'll just take care of that in my will. Mm-hmm. You know, even after hearing about this, I'll just take care of it. The thing is, if you just do that in your will, that surviving spouse would have the authority upon your death, the person's death, to file an elective share within 6 months of the person's death and take half of everything. Well, that's not really what you intended. And that, and when we say half of everything, that means life insurance. That means half of any kind of annuity, retirement plan. It's not just probate assets. It's not just real estate, money in the bank, and personal property. It's everything. It's a broad net. So what should people, if they're wanting to, if they're in a second marriage, number one, if you're going to think about getting into a second marriage or a third marriage, you got to do a prenup. You just have to do that. You have to take care of the prenup, because the prenup appropriate language is going to cut off the surviving spouse's right to make the elective share, and then you can just have a simple will that says, this is what I want to leave to my surviving spouse. Mm-hmm. So the prenup would be our first choice. If you got that, we don't have to worry about the elective share claim. The second thing, you know, would be that don't sit here and think, you know, I'm just going to, you know, leave this little bit to my surviving spouse and we have an agreement and then it's all going to go to my kids anyway. Those agreements don't work.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, cases that spin off into my office as the guy who litigates these cases, they don't work.
They don't,
because what happens is that in most cases, let's face it, from what I see, it's the older husband, the younger wife, second wife, the older husband dies, leaves it to the asset to the younger wife. If we've got that agreement there,
mm-hmm.
okay, well, that younger wife gets married again. Well, all of a sudden, that agreement just goes out the door.
Gone.
Or what happens is the younger wife, you know, she gets older, as we all do,
mm-hmm.
and she gets to a point where she's not really making her decisions anymore. Her power of attorney, in most cases, her kids, right. are the ones who are making decisions. Well, do you think that they're going to make sure this agreement that this old guy that their mother used to be married to, that they're going to make sure that that's upheld? They're not going to care about that.
No, or maybe even not know about it.
Right. So yep. It's just, you know, failing to plan is planning to fail. I mean, that's basically what it is. Get your prenup, number one. Number two, and in the event you do, you're in a second, third marriage, you're in one of these kind of situations where there are kids from a previous marriage. In most cases, I don't want to be say that the guy's always got more money. It just seems like that's the way it is, the older mm-hmm. husband and the younger wife. The older husband's out there. Go sit down with an attorney who deals with these issues and get a plan in place, like Cecil was talking about, this elective share trust. You know, otherwise, you're just setting your family up for a problem later on.
Yeah,
so
when you're out of the picture. Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of thought I was going to wrap that up and make it simple, but mm-hmm. I made it just as complicated. There's just no way to do it. It's mm-hmm. just, you've got to just kind of wade your way through it.
Let's take a break here. We'll regroup here. We make the complex understandable here. I think, in fairness to Cecil's description there, he did a pretty good job
good.
As far as laying it out there, at least hearing it for the first time in my ears here. We're going to take a short break here. If you wish to contact Harvell and Collins after the show, you can do it two ways. Go online to harvellandcollins.com or call 252-726-9050. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, and in studio with Cesar Harvell and Wes Collins, and we're talking about elective shares. And gentlemen, I have to be honest, for the last couple of weeks, this is a new topic to my ears, and I bet I'm not alone. I bet there's not a lot of people that are aware of it as far as people walking into your office, let alone your peers in the legal community. I bet this is a topic that isn't fully understood.
There's no doubt about it. It's just one of those kind of areas where it's complicated to a certain extent. I would say that the attorneys that, you know, who do a lot of estate planning, estate related work, deal with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, a good bit, and therefore they know how it works. And But it's, you know, it's like asking me about criminal defense. I don't know anything about it. You know, I wouldn't know what to tell someone about it. I always refer folks in criminal defense type matters to other, you know,
experts
other,
in that
other
field.
Lawyers that I trust. So, that's just the way it is. But, you know, this is definitely a topic that we deal with on a daily basis. You know, Cecil deals with it more on the planning side. And that's kind of what we've talked about, I think, last week and then up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I deal with it on the other side, which is, you know, kind of where the rubber hits the road and it's time to make the elective share or defend against an elective share claim, the litigation part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've really talked about it this morning from the context of, okay, if you have one of the, if you're in a second marriage, you're in one of these type situations, you really need to have the prenup, the postnup, or you need to do the planning in order to protect, meaning a trust, you know, appropriately drafted trust to deal with this. But I think we probably don't represent quite as many people who actually bring an elective share as compared to how many people we plan for that possibility.
That you
it
created.
Just happens to be people do that. There are just a lot more people who do the planning.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, my goodness, litigated a heck of a lot of these cases. Got maybe two or three of them going on right now that we're in the middle of defending some and then bringing the elective share on others. But basically, I think the listeners need to know that, you know, in the event you are in, you're married and your significant other passes away, your husband, wife passes away, then you do have, no matter what the will says, a 6-month period of time in order to claim your elective share rights. And you can either do that yourself or your power of attorney can do it. It has to be done, you know, during your lifetime. It can't be done by your estate, for example. If the husband dies and the wife dies 2 months later, it hasn't been filed yet, and then it's filed 3 months later through the estate, can't do that. But once you file that, I mean, there's no need to be mad about what's left to you in the will. Just file your elective share claim. You mm-hmm. understand what I'm saying? You know, don't get upset about the fact you got left out a little bit. Just file the elective share claim. So, and depending on the circumstances, which is completely based on how long the marriage lasted,
mm-hmm.
The percentage can get up to, you know, 50% of the total net assets that you're entitled to. So on the other side of that, we also, you know, we represent so many estates. Sometimes we deal with elective share claims made back against estates. And then we have an obligation to go through to provide information regarding values and assets and do a total net asset calculation so as to arrive at what that statutory number and amount would be. A lot of these cases, Mike, do get resolved because it's a matter of crunching numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of identifying assets, identifying, you know, liabilities, looking at what the spouse received otherwise and just doing the calculation. And therefore, you know, the attorneys in many cases are able to arrive at the number that is appropriate based on the circumstances. But just as many of these cases don't end up at that point, because there's a disagreement with regard to whatever aspect of the elective share claim there may be. It could be, you know, valuation of a business. It could be, you know, we don't feel like we're getting all the information with regard to if we're making the elective share claim with regard to what all the assets were. We're not getting all the information with regard to transfers of assets that may have taken place within a year of the person's death, which gets clawed back in, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just start giving things away to make the estate less so as to minimize or lessen the elective share claim. So a lot of times you get hung up in kind of a discovery process where we have to have all the facts and information so that we can calculate the elective share amount, the amount that the surviving spouse is entitled to. Sometimes there's a little bit of a fight with regard to that. Now, the statute, however, does have some safeguards in that in the event that the estate is not acting reasonably in providing the information, then the party seeking the elective share can get their attorney's fees paid for having to go through whatever headache is being created by the estate.
Right.
It's supposed to be, I mean, you can kind of read it. This statute is not that old. It's been on our books, what?
13.
13 years?
No, 2013.
2013. Yeah, I thought that was not quite that
about
long.
7 years or so.
Yeah. So since 2013. So, you know, when you read through the statute, you can kind of tell what they're trying to do is they're really trying to streamline it as much as possible. It's just based on straight percentage, years of marriage, and then obviously the discovery process, getting the information. These safeguards I'm talking about really sets forth a framework where, you know, we really want everyone to play ball and be transparent and provide the information. And in the event you don't, you might get popped for some attorney's fees for not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the statute is written that way, sometimes these elective share claims can become, you know, fairly contentious.
Let me ask you a question, because listeners out there, I know probably many of the listeners are married, maybe for the second time, and they have the situation that you described here. If someone were to come to Harvell and Collins and you say seek out legal advice, well, not every attorney's, not every firm is adept and is in elective share practice like you are at Harvell and Collins. How much time would a person have to spend before you just to get an understanding, an initial conversation, and walk out of your office with a clearer understanding of what elective share is and why it would be beneficial to them?
No more than an hour.
An hour of time.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
If you consult with an attorney who says you can't do anything about the elective share, go somewhere else.
Okay. Go to Harvell and Collins.
Well, you can just go somewhere else. I'm not going to say
plug
you. Go to someone.
Well, or doesn't bring it up in the discussion as well.
But if anyone who says you can't do anything about it, that's incorrect.
Okay.
There's planning techniques that are available in order to protect, in order to achieve your goals.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about achieving our goals in our estate plan as opposed to the state telling us what our goals are going to be.
Good point.
We just have to do the plan.
Be right back. Welcome back to our waning moments of Let's Talk Legal, and I'm going to throw it over to Wes to give us a close today on elective shares, if we're going to continue that conversation or if we're going to let it go what we put out there today, just to get awareness out there.
I would just say, you know, any listeners with regard to last week's program, this program, just write down elective share. Just write that word down, okay? You're going to know someone. It may not be you. You're going to know someone who this is going to affect,
mm-hmm.
and that someone's going to be, you know, a second marriage, someone in a second marriage or a third marriage, previous kids from a previous marriage. It's going to be someone who is a friend of yours in your church or so on and so forth who loses, you know, their significant other, and that significant other, husband, wife, is in, you know, was a second or third marriage, and they just need to know elective share is a thing. It's all you need to take from this. It's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when those kind of circumstances come up, you know, you need to go see an attorney who deals with this, who deals with the elective share, and know that it's a thing under those circumstances. Even if you don't really know exactly what it is, most attorneys are going to sit down with you and tell you about it, you know, within a short, you know, short meeting. It's not going to cost you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get educated and you'll know about it. I think that elective share, I know he's got 30 seconds or so, elective share becomes confusing. Write it down and just remember it is a thing under those circumstances. And it can be a very powerful thing that, you know, knowledge is power. You gotta get the right kind of counsel with regard to these type things. And a lot of people just don't do it.
Powerful and helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
Call Harvell and Collins today, 252-726-9050, or go to harvellandcollins.com. Thank you, gentlemen.